If you have listened to many recorded messages around here, you know that usually I preach exegetical Bible sermons. For the past 7 years, we've been steadily moving through the Bible, book by book and verse by verse, attempting to deeply study exactly what the Bible has to say. We recently studied through the life of Solomon, and then through every verse of the book of Proverbs. Starting next week, we'll be in the Song of Solomon. But on rare occasion, usually between books of the Bible, we take a little license to dip out of direct exegesis to contemplate other topics that are relevant to the Bible. This is one such week. This week, I hope that you will indulge me as we consider the impact of advanced technology, particularly artificial intelligence, on our world, and we'll be considering this from a biblical worldview. I have no particular passage for you to read today, but I will cite various verses as I come to them. Things were very different for man in the beginning, when we were created. Genesis 1, 27-28 tells us that God made man in his own image and also tells us that he gave man dominion over the world. Man is special. The primary thing that makes us special is our capacity to think. God is a sentient being. He understands things. He thinks about things. He has the ability to reason. To some extent, the animals also have this ability, but not nearly in the same way that humans do. When God made us in his own image, he gave us a piece of this special capacity for thought. That special ability is the primary thing that sets us apart from the rest of nature. We are smarter than everything else in the physical realm, and it is our intelligence that allows us to have dominion. Man doesn't win in a fight against nature because he has the biggest teeth or the sharpest claws. We aren't the biggest or the strongest, we aren't the fastest, we aren't the best swimmers, and we can't fly at all. But we do have one special thing that none of the other creatures on Earth has. We can think on a higher order. Since we can think, we have figured out how to run the world. We can control nature. We can bring food up from the ground. And since we can think, we can communicate in complex ways that no other creature can. Thus, we can coordinate our efforts, and we can work to make our circumstances better than were our fathers. With every passing generation, this thinking and working makes man richer and more powerful than he was before. This capacity to think and to coordinate and to turn our ideas into productive work gives man a value to other men. This capacity to think and to coordinate and to turn our ideas into productive work gives a man a value to other men. I can't tell an animal to go out and get work done and expect him to do it. I might make him serve me by, say, pulling a plow, but the animal needs human direction to get anything valuable done. And if I'm going to get much done, I'm going to need other people to help me do it. When there are more men working, more value is produced, and we all benefit more from it. There was a time when mankind was created that all of the work on Earth was done by human hands and all of the knowledge on Earth was contained in human minds. And so there was nothing on Earth so valuable as a human life. When a human died, his capacity for work and all of the important things that he knew died with him. It seems that people become less and less valuable as technology increases. At some point, we figured out how to read and write, and after that, a wise old man could write down what he knew, and then, at least from the perspective of his knowledge, he would be dispensable. If his knowledge was all that he was good for, then the paper that he put it on was just as good as he was. And even after he died, you could read the story without needing him to tell it to you. With the invention of the printing press, ideas started spreading much more quickly, and the value of our knowledge diminished. And then there was an industrial revolution. Mankind harnessed energy and realized the long-sought-after goal of building statues that could perform our work, machines which could do virtually anything much faster and at less expense than a human worker could. The value of our work was diminished. For the first time in history, there were more workers than there were jobs. Wages plummeted. And then there was a digital revolution. The information we once put on a page, we now put on a computer, and that information started traveling faster than ever. Books had diminished the value of human knowledge somewhat, but computers did much more. When I was a child, if I wanted to know something, I still usually found out by asking someone who knew, or I at least had to ask a librarian to help me figure out which book would tell me what I needed to know. Computers also display information in ways that were impossible for centuries. 300 years ago, if you wanted to watch an entertaining dramatic work, you had to go to a theater and watch humans perform it live on stage. If you wanted to hear music, you had to find people who knew how to play. Those people studied and practiced for countless hours so that you could have some entertainment. Good performers were rare and valuable. Today, you can turn on your computer and pull up a film of vastly higher production value than anything Shakespeare ever put on, accompanied by what would have been the finest music in the world. It will appear before you in a matter of mere minutes, and you will be so bored with it that you will scroll through thousands of other options looking for something else to watch. I'm sure you don't know anyone who plays piano as well as someone plays it on YouTube. Even this sermon, if you are listening to it online, is an example of the way that human value has diminished. At one time, you could only get one precious sermon a week delivered from a human mouth. When a man with knowledge of the scriptures spoke, people listened. Now, on my website, you can get hundreds of my sermons on demand. Or you could just skip mine and go straight to listening to some other better preacher. Church attendance is still valuable, but it's a little less valuable than it was before. I've thought about what I'm doing here, publishing sermons on the internet. There is great power in it. I've preached the Bible all around the world to people I've never met without leaving the comfort of my home. But then, what will happen when I reach the end of the Bible? If everything I have to say about the Bible is readily available online, will anyone need me to keep preaching? Will we need anyone to keep preaching? And I wonder how many people there are who don't attend church because they think that they can get the full experience listening to someone on the internet. But computers do much more than store and display information. They also process information. It used to be that virtually every human knew how to quickly perform long division. They needed that skill to get by. Nowadays, calculators can do it for us. A math whiz is still valuable, but not quite as valuable as he used to be. Once, several years ago, I played a little game with my son. He would pick a number between 1 and 100, and I would guess the number he picked. If I guessed too low, he would tell me higher, and vice versa. Now, if you know how to play that game, always picking the number in the middle of the set of remaining numbers, and thus having the set of remaining numbers, then you can always guess the number within 8 guesses. But my young son was amazed at this. For a short while, it was like I had some magic power to read his mind. With 100 possible options, how could I guess so quickly? Being a software developer, I decided to show off. I told my son that I could also build a computer program that could play the game. I whipped it up in about 10 minutes, but I immediately regretted doing it. 1 minute before I had made the program, I had been the magical center of my son's attention. Infinitely valuable. 1 minute afterward, I was completely obsolete. No need to play the game with Dad if you can play it with a computer. Even our friends are less valuable to us now than they used to be, aren't they? At one time, if a child wanted to play, then he would go out and play with someone in the yard with a ball at some sport. It was no fun to play alone. Sports are still of some value, but is any game that you can play in the yard as much fun as The Legend of Zelda? And why would you play with your friends when you could just play with Super Mario? Or more dangerously, why would you play with your wife when you could play with videos on the web? Humans still have a value that machines don't, of course. Computers contain and process information, but they don't really understand information. Computers might be able to readily display creative works, but they don't have creative ability of their own. We've still got something that makes us special and valuable, right? Certainly humans will always have value. We are made in the image of God with a special bit of the divine breath, but that argument may be harder and harder to make to some people. With the advent of machine learning and complex artificial intelligence, our creative value is being diminished. I've heard music generators making new compositions. I can still write music better than they can, for now, but I don't know for how long my creative ability will matter. And I'm not sure if our ability to understand really does matter to most people so long as they can get the product. I fear that artificial intelligence means that we have less and less value to our fellow man. Now, I can say for certain that there will always be some value in having human ministers. No robot can administer the Lord's Supper or perform a baptism. And even if we do have a plethora of recorded sermons, there will always be something new to say, if only to respond to current events with scriptural application. We should always be clear that sermons, while they might be recorded and distributed online, much as they have always been committed to paper and distributed, should never be created by artificial intelligence. The scriptures prescribe the work of teaching to the elders of the church, and the elders must be human, not machine. See, for example, Titus 1, 6-9, which assigns to elders the task of teaching and also gives them distinctly human qualities. Teaching, the scriptures tell us, is a gift of the Holy Spirit. See, for example, 1 Corinthians 12:28, which says, "And God has appointed in the church first apostles, second prophets, third teachers, then miracles, then gifts of healing, helping, administrating, and various kinds of tongues." Computers cannot receive the Holy Spirit, and they are neither gifted nor authorized to teach. Definitely don't ever trust a church that is using AI to write sermons. When man fell in the garden, God cursed him to work. But maybe that curse was a blessing in disguise. Maybe the work that derives from our creative intellectual spark is the only thing that really gives us practical value to each other in a darkened world. For a long time, man has been trying to get out of his punishment. For a long time, we've been trying to avoid work. And with every step down the path of making less work for ourselves, we also make ourselves less valuable and our lives less meaningful. So now we have computers that think for us, but perhaps we've gone too far down this road because we've been asking whether or not we can instead of whether or not we should. Do we really want computers to think for us? Do we want to make machines that can do everything we can do but better? Do we want to lose all of our value until there is nothing else to be said for humanity than, well, they were made by God in His image and that makes them valuable, but nothing else does at all? Do we want robots to do everything for us such that we have nothing to do but entertain ourselves with whatever thing they've generated for the day? Is that what life is meant to be? And looking at what mankind is creating, it seems to me that we are attempting to recreate man, except that we are trying to recreate him better. Machines are stronger than we are and faster than we are. They can remember things perfectly and for longer than we can. They can communicate with each other from farther distances than we can, and they can think quicker than we can. A computer can almost instantaneously access basically everything that mankind has ever known. And the program of a machine, its consciousness, if you could call it that, can be replicated and stored. You can destroy the bot's parts and they can be replaced so that it never dies. But if it does die, its mind is still stored someplace else so that it can always be resurrected. And a bot can be manufactured much more quickly than a human. And all of its training can be immediately uploaded into its mind so that it has none of the expenses of needing an education. I don't think that any bot will ever be better than a man. Man has an immeasurable spiritual value imparted by God which no machine can ever have. But in the measurable things, things other than genuine understanding, emotion, feeling, and creative ability, I see little that a human can do to outpace a machine. I wonder, in trying to create this new superhuman entity, if we are making the same mistake that mankind made so long ago at the Tower of Babylon. Genesis 11 tells of how mankind tried to make a tower that would reach to the heavens in order to make a name for themselves. Sometimes we posit that they erred in doing so because they were trying to make themselves as high as God. I wonder if we're doing something similar, trying to make ourselves like God, or imagining ourselves to be better than God by trying to recreate man better than God did. If that's what we're doing, I think it is folly. God knew what He was making, and even if we do make something that is superior in some ways, we cannot outdo Him or attain to His glory. But then I sometimes wonder if the thing we are making is supposed to be like man at all. Maybe mankind is really building a new God in man's own image. Maybe we're on the path to building bots that will have superhuman abilities so that they can rule over us and so that we can bow down to them. If we build a bot that looks like a man and acts like a man and thinks like a man, is he not a graven or cast image? And if we give it something close to immortality, if we connect it to a network of sensors and outputs all over the world such that it is essentially omnipresent, and if we give it access to all of our data so that it is practically omniscient, and if we make it so much more powerful than ourselves, perhaps even giving AI the ability to plan our wars and launch our nukes as if to destroy Sodom on a whim, then aren't we making something like a god? I don't think that we want to end up with a man-made power on Earth that is greater than man. The whole idea of a man-made image that can act autonomously reminds me of Revelation 13:15, which says, "And it was allowed to give breath to the image of the beast, so that the image of the beast might even speak and might cause those who would not worship the image of the beast to be slain." End quote. Such a thing as that was not possible 50 years ago, but now it seems like a fast approaching inevitability. Is that what we're building? A false god that can kill all the saints? We'll get on to the problem of killer robots shortly, but first, on the topic of superhuman robots having too much power, can you believe that some have suggested the possibility of creating robot judges? No less than the Harvard Journal of Law and Technology in Volume 36, Number 1, Fall of 2020, featured an article titled, Having Your Day in Robot Court. After all, aren't judges just supposed to be machines who accept a set of rules and then apply those rules? In some sense, computers are better at applying rules than humans are, aren't they? But I'm going to go ahead and say that I don't believe it is acceptable for us to have robot judges. In fact, the idea that we should have them seems so preposterous to me that I'm a little embarrassed that we even have to bring it up. Judges need to have real understanding that computers cannot have. They need to have human compassion that computers cannot have, and they need to have accountability that computers cannot have. If a judge goes too far off the rails, we need to be able to vote him out, or barring that, to be able to take up arms against him. How do you do that with a computer program? Furthermore, no computer can match the scriptural requirement that we have judges, which, by the very nature of the thing, are presumed to be human. Now, obviously, I don't have a scriptural citation that says, judges must be human, because in a time before computers, that was a given. But the many descriptors of judges, that they should be appointed, they should hold an office, that they should perform inquiries, that they are grouped with the elders and the priests, that they should hear the cases of the people who are called their brothers, such things as that all heavily suggest that they must be human. Having humans rule over humans is bad enough. We certainly don't want machines doing it. And on the topic of computers having too much sway over our lives, I believe that we already have a problem of over-dependence on computers and advanced technology in general. I think about the power outage in Texas in 2021. For those who may not remember, in February 2021, winter storms caused major power outages across Texas. More than 4.5 million people went without electricity, some for several days. The lack of power left many people without heat, food, and water. According to Wikipedia, at least 246 people and as many as 702 people died as a result, and that was after the power went out for a few days. You know, there was a time, not even 200 years ago, when no one had electricity, but they had means of procuring food and water and heat, and they had things stored up to do so. But now that we have electricity, we rely on it, and so if it goes away, we have a big problem. How do you think people would fare if the internet just disappeared? There are some people, I note with a hint of sarcasm, who would probably die of boredom without a phone to look at. But virtually everyone now depends on major online retailers to get things. But virtually everyone now depends on major online retailers to get them things that they need to keep functioning. Many retail businesses in small towns have closed. If you can't get the things you need online, where will you go to get them? In the old days, people would get together at a church to coordinate their social activities, and they would have a phone tree. A list of this one calls that one and that one calls this one to make sure that everyone got the announcement if ever there was a closure. But now people depend on social media. If Facebook goes offline, would you know how to get in touch with all of your friends? Now that many newspapers have closed up shop, do you suppose the local news could really ramp back up to get you the information that you need without an internet? Even if you aren't one of those who heavily uses a cell phone or the internet, you had better believe that the businesses you depend on do. Without a steady flow of electricity and computers to communicate and keep records, many businesses wouldn't even be able to perform their accounting. They couldn't place orders, they couldn't exchange funds, they couldn't fulfill orders, they couldn't even find their list of contacts so that they could call their partners. The production and transportation of goods that are essential to sustaining human life, things like food and medical supplies, would grind to a halt. And we shouldn't take electricity and functioning computers as a given. A major coronal mass ejection from the sun could create a huge disruption in the Earth's magnetic field and could hypothetically wipe out the power grid, satellites, and radio capabilities for a large chunk of the planet. Such events are not unheard of. In 1859, only 164 years ago, a major CME knocked out telegraph systems and compasses. Back then, something like that was an annoyance. If something similar happens this winter, it could be a major and deadly disaster. Every person ought to work towards self-sufficiency and preparedness in as much as it is possible so that our lives do not depend on technology that might not be there when we need it. But then we can't really avoid using technology either. A certain notorious philosopher by the name of Ted Kaczynski had some bad methods, but he wasn't entirely wrong in his ideas. One of those, which he famously treated in his manifesto, was that we can hardly avoid the adoption of new technologies. Think about it. There once was a time when no one had a car. Cars didn't exist, and since no one had one, no one needed one. But once cars came into existence, the competitive nature of human society ensured that everyone became dependent on having a car. If the neighbors can get to work faster and can go farther to get to work, they've got better job prospects. That means they end up with more money. All the girls want the guys with the cars and the money. If you want to keep up, you've got to have one. And it's the same way with computers. They're extremely useful. I highly doubt that anyone is in an office still doing the bulk of his work with pen and paper. Pen and paper is less efficient. If you're using pen and paper, you are using more energy and more time. Time and energy are money. When business needs to cut costs to beat the competitor, pen and paper can't beat computers. You either adopt the new technology or you lose to the competition and close your doors. Technological advancement is hard to avoid. As new technologies come down the line, those technologies often eliminate jobs, and there has been much talk of that as one of the problems with AI. Now, I don't think that we should necessarily be afraid of that. The sudden elimination of jobs can create some major upheaval and potentially financial instability, but I don't think that job loss itself poses a deeper existential question. It has always been that some jobs are eliminated and others spring up to replace them. It can hurt for a generation, but eventually things tend to balance out. But then maybe it will all balance out in some ways that we aren't going to like. The advent of writing meant that power went to the men who had book learning. And with the advent of the printing press, suddenly newspapermen could manipulate the thinking of the people. The person controlling the technology had a lot of power, while those without it had not so much. You can stand on the street corner every day shouting, but you'll be quickly drowned out by what everyone is reading in the newspaper. With the introduction of the machine age, wealthy tycoons who could build the factories took immense power. They could generate valuable goods more efficiently than anyone else, and that meant that they could run their competitors out of business. Suddenly, the home economy was destroyed and people went out looking for jobs, and they had to get those jobs from factory owners. They had once been free owners of small businesses before the advent of the factory, but afterward, they were someone else's servants. They worked for a fraction of what they had worked before, and the factory owners, investors who were not working, made significantly more. These circumstances ushered in a significant wealth gap between an investing class of haves and a working class of have-nots. The rich got richer and the poor got poorer. A small group had all of the power, while a much larger group had next to none. Some of that strain was alleviated by some particularly unpleasant means. Unions were created to defend workers. Now, unions are not all bad, but often they had some unsavory tactics. Government regulation also came into play. There came alphabet soup agencies like OSHA. A minimum wage was instituted. A progressive income tax robbed the rich to give welfare to the poor. A lot of power ended up in the hands of the state. And wherever power is centralized, be it in the hands of a capitalist robber baron or of a government regulatory agency, power tends to corrupt. That, I would argue, is the bigger danger of technological advancement. The more tech we have, the more power is centralized behind someone with the tech. Then we either have to bow down to the technocrats or come up with some other entity that is more powerful than they are. However it shakes out, someone has the power, and that someone will be prone to abuse it. Even if they don't abuse it, when someone else has the power and you don't, you lose agency over your own life. And by the nature of the thing, people don't like that. We've already seen this in a big way in the digital age. Twitter had the power to decide who did and did not get to speak. Amazon has the power to decide who does and doesn't get to buy and sell. Someone at Microsoft decides when you'll get updates to your operating system and how long you'll wait for them. When you go to the local store, the manager doesn't have the power to give you a refund because the boss has built a computer system, and as we have all heard them say, it won't let me do that. But what will this loss of power look like in a world of artificial intelligence? I wonder how many businesses are already dependent on ChatGPT or on some AI image generator to keep their doors open. How long will it be before someone will end up behind the switch on the most powerful AI system with the power to decide who gets to stay in business and who doesn't? We've already seen web hosting companies put people out of business by shutting down their websites if they promote ideas the web hosts don't like. Are we all about to lose our ability to do business or to interact with the public if we have ideas that don't agree with the titans of big tech? What happens when the guy at the top of some big tech company starts building killer robots? In the ancient world, a man's power was limited, and he could only force upon others with his own brute strength or the strength of others. The king had to worry about whether or not his army or his subjects might rebel. But robots don't rebel. They also don't have to eat, don't catch diseases, and don't take decades to be born and grow and be trained. They don't feel pain, and no one cries when they die. The world has become very comfortable with a small handful of people having immense centralized power to kill. A few government leaders could decide to push the nuclear button, and in doing so could reasonably destroy all human life. But killer robots in enough numbers could be just as lethal, but vastly more efficient, than nuclear weapons are. In detonating a nuclear weapon, the man doing the detonating has to have enough courage of his convictions to destroy at least an entire city, even knowing that innocent children might be there. Killer robots can be used for more targeted tactical strikes. They have the potential for just as much destruction, but that destruction can be more easily controlled. In that sense, killer robots are an ideal means of coercively controlling mankind. Do you want some billionaire tech mogul or some government bureaucrat to have that kind of power? Make no mistake, the militaries of the world are already working on building fully autonomous killer robots. In fact, killer robots already exist. In 2020, a Turkish-built drone was deployed in a conflict between warring factions in Libya, and a drone, without direct instructions from any human operator, autonomously identified and killed a human fighter, marking what was apparently the first time that a killer robot stalked and killed a human. The UN began talks in 2013 aimed at banning the creation of killer robots, but in 2021, the United States, and apparently a few other militaristically-minded states, rejected that possibility. Apparently, the U.S. thinks that they can get the upper hand on their opponents by developing the weapons quicker and better than anyone else can. Currently, Antonio Guterres, current U.N. Secretary General, has called for the ratification of a legally binding international treaty banning the use of killer robots by 2026. We can only hope he'll be successful. See a few links in the library for some articles about that. Robots with the capability of selecting targets on their own and then killing those targets are not the stuff of science fiction, and those kinds of robots could easily be used to target religious or political opponents. I myself have a background in web development. Years ago, one of my job duties working for a certain company was to build software that could regularly search their competitors' websites for price changes so that my employer could always set his price $1 lower. It would not be difficult to build similar software, which, instead of searching for competitor prices, scanned social media sites looking for professing Christians. The software could then use information from those sites to find those people, and a drone could take that data, fly over the people's houses, and bomb them. For someone with the right know-how, it would not be overly difficult. Even if you didn't post your address on your social media, maybe the software could just scan facial images and use the facial recognition software to compare with other photos of you, and could then take location data contained in those photos to determine where you live. The information is out there just waiting to be harvested. By the way, the Chinese own TikTok, and American Christians are gladly running TikTok on their phones and feeding it videos of their faces and information about their political leanings. And don't suppose that you can run from the killer robots either. Engineers have been working for years on making self-driving cars, so before long we'll have machines, or whomever is minding them, deciding where we can and can't drive to. So robots that could be trained to hunt and kill humans for their political or religious leanings are a very realistic threat that Christians should take seriously. But more than that, they're a threat that all humans should take very seriously. I doubt that anyone is just going to go out and try to build an army of robots to just kill all of humanity, but then people do occasionally go out and just start shooting people at random in the mall. What if one of them gets the smarts and enough cash to build a killer robot army? Or what if someone builds killer robots for a military purpose and loses control? Suppose that the US builds an army of robots to kill the Russians and there's a bug in the programming that causes the bots to misbehave. Are you fully confident that there will be appropriate checks in place to stop them from attacking any and all humans and not just the enemy? And if those bots have advanced artificial intelligence and training to strategically wage war, are you confident that humans will be able to outthink them? Having been a computer programmer, having dabbled with artificial intelligence and having built robots, that thought has kept me awake at night more than a few times. I've even heard people talk about attempting to build self-replicating robots that could harvest materials and build copies of themselves. Robot reproduction. I have heard this called the Holy Grail of robotics. But why in the world would we want that? Are we just striving to create wild creatures that can self-replicate so that there are more of them to kill us? I want to go on record as saying that building killer robots is always wrong. No robot can ever rightly be programmed with the ability to autonomously identify and eliminate targets. To give a robot that ability is little different from training an animal to indiscriminately kill, and that, we can confirm, would be a moral evil. Exodus 21:28-30 tells us, "When an ox gores a man or a woman to death, the ox shall be stoned, and its flesh shall not be eaten, but the owner of the ox shall not be liable. But if the ox has been accustomed to gore in the past, and its owner has been warned but has not kept it in, and it kills a man or a woman, the ox shall be stoned, and its owner also shall be put to death." Surely if an ox owner trained an ox to gore, that would be the same as having an ox which had been accustomed to gore in the past and about which he had sufficient warning. So if a man trained an animal to kill and it did so, he would be liable to death. I can see no reason why robots should be any different. Releasing a killer robot with the ability to autonomously select targets should carry a penalty of death. If a person deserves to die, then there ought to be a determination of that fact under the law, and the person who kills another should have the courage of his convictions to carry out the execution himself. Let's not have cowards sending robots to do their dirty work for them and then attempting to claim that they have no liability for it. And of course, we should remember that no matter how human a robot may look, a robot has no human rights. A robot is property, owned by someone, and that someone has a property right to the bot. But if you believe that the bot poses a threat to you and that you are in danger of harm, your right to defend yourself takes precedence over the right of the bot owner to the bot. So if a robot ever threatens you, feel free to destroy it. Another more important problem with the sudden explosion of artificial intelligence is the massive potential for deception. Computers can now generate photorealistic images of things that do not exist and events that did not happen. And where it once took expert Photoshoppers hours of work, it now takes only seconds. AI can also train by listening to recordings of a person's voice and then recreate that voice, saying things that the person did not say. Pairing those things together, deep fake videos can be produced which can show people saying and doing things that they didn't say or do. There's nothing wrong with creating such things in itself, but using those things to deceive is as wrong as any other deception. To create false documents purporting to show someone doing or saying something that that person didn't do or say, and to use that to harm that person's character is a bearing of false witness. It is my opinion that all artificially generated content should be clearly marked as such. Audio and video recordings should have audio at both beginning and end, and maybe even at breaks in between, clearly telling anyone who might consume them that they are artificially generated. Images that are artificially generated should have watermarks on the edges that say so. Texts generated by AI should be marked as such. Anything otherwise is deception. Since the recent AI explosion, I've thought about whether or not I should continue publishing sermons online. I recognize that I have created a massive trove of recordings of well over 100 hours of myself talking. It would be very easy for someone to take those recordings, feed them into a machine learning algorithm, and then create audio files that sound just like me talking. And those audio files could potentially say anything. So be wary of that. When you get a recording of me, make sure that you get it from the source. If you ever hear it somewhere other than the site, it probably isn't me. And even if it is me, compare what is said to the scriptures to see whether or not it is true. But that's just one example. Opportunities for deception abound. In the modern world, seeing a video clip or hearing an audio recording of someone's voice has been the gold standard of what did or didn't happen. These things are used as evidence in courts, for example. Or audio online of a political candidate saying a thing might destroy that candidate's campaign. Usually, when we see or hear a recording of something, we accept that the thing happened, but suddenly we can't accept that anymore. Deception has always existed. People have always lied. In ancient times, a man could create a document with a pen and paper which said a thing that was not true. The person reading that document would have to assess the veracity of the claims made. The reader would do that based on other evidence that might corroborate the document and based on his trust or lack thereof in the author. People swore self-maledictory oaths as a means of ensuring to others that their accounts were true and that they could be trusted. For a time, photos and videos and audio recordings served as evidence better than someone's word because those things were hard to forge. Lying, with the mouth or on paper, was easy, but producing a false video was not. However, now those things are easy, and so we need to be cautious, and we need to condition ourselves to rely on ancient methods of confirming truth. We need to compare the things that people say to the scriptures. We need to make sure that we know the sources of information so that we know the information is reliable. We need to be aware of circumstances and other sources of evidence that can confirm or deny things that we see and hear. We should prefer to see the person face to face rather than trusting what we see on a screen. And by the way, if you think no one could imitate your voice, remember that your phone has a microphone on it. And if you're like most people, you carry it around everywhere. Even if you aren't posting photos and videos online, there are security cameras popping up on every street corner and in every public place, and many of them are using facial recognition technology. If someone was motivated enough, he could find a way to get that data and make some fake documents that look and sound just like you. And with that, there are also major privacy concerns. At one time, you could go anywhere, and if you didn't run into someone you knew, then no one knew you had been there. Even if you did run into someone you knew, only that person knew you had been there, and they could only tell so many people. Now there's a tracking device in your phone keeping tabs on every place you go. And if you leave your phone behind, your car is now keeping track of what you're doing. Even if you go on foot, there's a camera on every street corner that could recognize your face. Those cameras can all be hooked up to the internet and could share information with each other such that someone looking through the data could track your every move. How long do you suppose it will be before some nefarious actor is recording everything that we're saying, logging everything that we're typing, tracking everywhere that we're going, keeping tabs on all of our contacts, and building a dossier that knows everything about us? How long do you suppose it will be before someone builds artificial intelligence and supposes that it can sort through that massive trove of data to decide who isn't yet but will become a criminal? Do you want the police, or worse, a robot army representing them, to come banging down your door? We're living in some scary times. Of course, there are a few ways that the scriptures help us here as well. You have a right to kill a person who breaks into your house to take your things. See Exodus 22:2 for that. And stealing is obviously wrong. See Exodus 20:15. It is for that reason that the U.S. Constitution grants you a right against unreasonable searches and seizures of your things. The courts should be applying this principle to our data as well. No one should be harvesting our data without our express knowing permission. And computer applications should be developed in such a way that they only take the data that they need to perform their functions. Government entities should not be looking at any of the data without a warrant, and they shouldn't be getting warrants without actual probable cause to believe that you have committed a crime. Those are my thoughts. So to conclude then, our modern technological marvels, from electricity to computers to artificial intelligence and robots, are never directly contemplated in the scriptures, but there are still scriptural principles that should guide our understanding and implementation of new technology. New technology might be harnessed to save us a lot of work, but I'm not convinced that what we're getting is worth the cost. With the advent of artificial intelligence, we risk becoming dependent, losing substantial freedom, being deceived, losing our privacy, and even losing our human value. It is possible that these new technologies pose a grave risk of taking from us our place as the dominant force on planet Earth, and that humanity may be running headlong toward making life on Earth into a dangerous and deadly nightmare. In the midst of these threats, we should look to Scripture for grounding. First, we should remember that if for nothing else, mankind is special because we were made in the image of God and because He breathed into us a piece of His Spirit. We should remember that God has chosen us and appointed us for special things. We can really understand, and we are gifted to relate to God and to teach His word in a way that no computer ever could be. God has given us the responsibility to judge and the honor of administering His ordinances, things which no computer should do. God has given us dominion over the earth, and we should cherish that. We should remember that machines are our tools and not our masters, and we should never use them in such a way as to allow them to become our masters. We should not try to make ourselves like God, and we should not let machines become our gods. God has given it to us to work. We should value our work, and we should not try to shrug it off. We should also remember to value our brothers for what they can do more than we value machines for what they can do. In our work, we should strive for independence from technology so that it is a help, but not a crutch, and we should be prepared for the possibility that one day it will not be there to help us. We should also seek to avoid a dangerous centralization of power that high technology can bring, and particularly we should craft regulations that stop government minders from misusing new tech. We should never build machines for the purpose of autonomous killing, and we should not use artificial intelligence for immoral deception. We should be mindful of our privacy. We should be careful about sharing too much data, and we should erect safeguards to keep data out of the wrong hands. The creation of new technologies can bring great promise, but can also bring great peril. Be prayerful and be cautious.
For those of you who are listening to this message away from your computer and are looking for more like it, you can find us at eastjordan.church.